This is your 24-hour source for jazz and blues on the radio, KRML Carmel. The program is for locals only with Gary Hamada.
Well, we all deserve a treat after the day after tax day. The deadline is passed, and we all breathe a sigh. And, of course, the reward is that we get to have the jazz cat, Leroy Downs, in studio here at KRML in person. What a treat here. Leroy has got a special guest lined up again today, and none other than the great Greg Osby. And he's going to tell us more about it. Take it away, Leroy.
Hey, Gary, I just want to say, first of all, thanks for just letting me come in and do all of these great interviews. I really appreciate being able to just come right to the studio and do it live, man. It's all great.
You know what? I would kill for that voice.
Oh, man, it's all good, man. Mr. Greg Osby is just one of the cats that's been on the scene for, you know, quite some time, putting some great music down, and just needs all the accolades that he deserves. So I definitely wanted to extend my hand and speak with Mr. Greg Osby. How you doing, man?
I'm very good. Thank you.
Good, good. Hey, man, you know, like so many other great artists in the past, you've had quite an extensive career on Blue Note Records.
Right.
Yeah.
15 years and counting.
15 years and counting, man. Well, that just shows that one of the great record companies knows what you're doing, and you definitely put some good stuff out there.
Well, certainly. They've been really supportive, and actually, you know, supportive in that they've stayed out of my way and let me document things as I hear them and as I, you know, choose to see them through. So it's been a great association here.
Yeah, that's always important in a creative sense, that the artist get a chance to express himself like he needs to express himself without anybody telling you to paint blue when you're painting red, you know.
It's a luxury.
I bet. So, the concept of your latest album, Channel 3, that stems from the power of the trio, but not in the traditional sense.
Well, traditional and non-traditional. I mean, you know, there have been precedents, you know, with a saxophone trio. It's a trio, saxophone, bass, and drums, so there's an absence of a chordal instrument. There's no guitar, no piano. So the remaining musicians have to compensate, you know, for that loss and to be, you know, more detailed and a lot more deliberate in what we're doing. So it makes us work harder, makes us not reliant on, you know, devices and motives that, you know, would normally work if we had the support system of a pianist or something like that. So it's just, you know, ups the ante. It challenges us more, and I think that's, you know, part of the whole impetus behind, you know, me making the decision to do it. You know, as an artist, you can kind of box yourself into a corner, so to speak, you know, playing with the same people, playing your own music, playing the same venues, traveling to the same places. So you have to create, you know, different parameters, raise the bar, so to speak, you know, to push yourself so that you won't, you know, settle into that comfort zone, which is kind of the kiss of death for a creative artist.
Right. Well, that's what it always seems to be about, man, taking the envelope and pushing it forward. I mean, that's what jazz has been about from day one.
It's supposed to be.
Well, so many players, great players, man, come out of St. Louis. Is there anything about growing up in that experience that you can attribute toward your approach to composition, theory, and performance?
Well, definitely. As a child of the 60s and 70s, you know, St. Louis functioned kind of as a crossroads. It's, you know, located in smack dab in the middle of the country. So you would have musicians who were traveling either east, west, or north and south, and they would stop there and, you know, do work and play with local musicians or park for a while and hang. So, you know, there were, reverberations of people's presence from all over the country. So I got like a very healthy mix of, you know, regional styles. Also, some of the local elders were very, very detailed. St. Louis is kind of, they're coming out of the, like I said, the detail school. People are very, very efficient, very much into enunciation and proper technique and proper delivery and things like that. So early on, I had some really, really profound role models. And there were, it wasn't like the sloppy school. It was like really, really refined technique. But then again, you know, you also had some of the more creative players, know, and I wasn't really a part of that, but I would hear them rehearsing Judith Hemphill, Oliver Lake, Hamid Blewett, Bakita Carroll, Floor, all those kind of cats with the St. Louis Black Artists bag. So I, you know, I got, you know, a dose of all that, and that combined with my experience with the funk bands and the soul bands, blues bands, R&B bands of the late 70s, because back then all the groups had horns.
Right.
Or horn sections.
Horn sections, right.
So you learn how to play and to blend and to fit in and to play a captivating solo and keep people on the floor, because if you didn't, you know,
right.
Well, let's just say
sudden death
would jump off.
Yeah, man. Well, you know, people talk about New York and Chicago and all of these places, New Orleans, that jazz has come from. But, man, St. Louis seems to be, like, you know, one that's right there on the map, too.
Most definitely. I mean, definitely. You know, a lot of people who made some wonderful contributions, you know, to the lineage of this music and innovators, you know, they come from that area.
Yeah.
And, or some people came through that area, influenced those people who came from that area. So it's a great place to be from. But, you know, sadly, just like a lot of places, larger metropolises in the United States, things have diminished somewhat. There's still pockets of activity, but it's nowhere near, you know, the abundant level of creativity that, you know, that it once, you know, was responsible for. So, I mean, I hope to be a catalyst, you know, towards, you know, making it what it once was, or, you know, acknowledging some of the great people that came from there.
Sure, they're like little embers everywhere, really all over the country, man. It used to be on fire, now it's, you know, little embers burning. We need some gasoline.
Yes. I mean, well, you know, things, priorities have shifted. You know, a lot of the activity is primarily in universities and conservatories as opposed to actual venues.
Right.
Cats, you know, locking horns and creatively coming up with different approaches and concepts, you know, thinking all night long, hangs, speakeasies,
right,
after hours, you know, just these literal workshops where people, you know, test their, you know, wares against, you know, the better cats on the scene to see where they stand, and then they go home and work some stuff out, and everybody's contributing.
Yeah.
It's just a lot different now. Yeah.
Right. This is Leroy Downs on Live with the Jazz Cat with me today. That's on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio, of course. With me today, I have Mr. Greg Osby. Now, the names, Herbie, Dizzy, Andrew Hill, Jackie Byer, those just a few of the greats you perform with, man. That knowledge and experience obviously cannot be learned in the classroom. What do you, as an educator, give to your students that can prepare them for the experiences that they're going to have in this business?
Well, as an educator, I have somewhat of an unorthodox approach to, you know, the dissemination of information.
That's
good. I kind of bombard the students with a lot of information up front, you know, during the initial, you know, meetings of a semester or of, you know, however it's set up as a private student. And I allow them to digest it at their own rate, because classroom and curriculum approach teaching, it's really it's kind of doomed to failure, really, because you have students who embrace and retain and recall information at different levels.
Right.
And so you may have a few gifted students in a classroom, and, you know, they're the ones who are lamenting in the back of the room, sulking, because they've already, you know, got it.
Right.
And then so they have to wait for the people who maybe a little slower, maybe no less talented, but it just takes them a few, you know, few tries. And
understood.
You have to be a lot more patient with them. So I think, you know, the evaluation system has to be refined, first of all, and then you have to deal with people as individuals and not in terms of groups and curriculum like that, because, of course, you know, the gifted people, you know, will, they'll feel like, you know, their time is being wasted, or, you know, they'll be far advanced, you know. And it's just, that's just not a good way to look at things.
It's kind of like the Montessori school concept of music, you know. There's different levels, and people who are naturally getting things, you know. It's like, yeah, maybe you can give the ones who are getting it to proceed them on to more challenging things and leave these guys here to figure this out, and so many different levels in the classroom all at once.
So, certainly. I mean, I'd like to teach you the way I would have liked to have learned, because I happen to be one of those students. I mean, I would get a book and I would read the whole book, not the chapter that was, you know, the lesson. And I would supplement that with information from libraries, or I would go pester elders and question them and back them into a corner and ask them all the questions. And, you know, other fellow musicians, I would have them evaluate me. I would record everything I did. I would always, you know, take extra steps. And because, you know, just the levels of aptitude and you know, they vary. And some people, you know, they're just voracious, you know, with their appetite, you know, for information. And some people are, you know, just a little slower, and they have to be coached and goaded.
Well, that's why the world knows the name Greg Osby, man, you know, because you step out there and it's known. And I'm sure all those great cats you played with got a part of that. And they're like, look, this cat is he's in the search for information. And once you see that, people are just so very giving with the vast knowledge they have. And they want you to get it because they want you to just be right there with it, because you're going to continue it on.
Absolutely. I mean, I'm just another runner, you know, passing the baton, you know, trying to impart that same information on, you know, to some of the young people that play with me, you know, young students, you know, the young cats on the scene, the
right.
newbies, you know, it's my obligation. I mean, it's, you know, that's just the way it goes.
That is the way it's go. That's the way it's been, man. The elders play with the young cats, pass it on, and now the young cats are the cats. They're not
right.
the young cats, you know.
Right. I mean, you know, I was very, very fortunate, you know, to come at the tail end of, you know, that whole apprenticeship school. I was able to play with a lot of established elders, you know, people who made, you know, I mean, just grand, innovative contributions to this music. I mean, and they embraced me wholeheartedly and took me on the road early on in my career. Just taught me the ropes. I was, you know, a careful observer of, you know, everything from how they, encourage their musicians, you know, to do better, and how they, you know, reacted and did business, you know, with promoters and agents and record companies. I, you know, was very careful to observe how the studio worked and how music business attorneys negotiated things. You know, so it wasn't just, you know, a for hire situation. It was
sure.
actually, you know, an education.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. You're talking with Greg Osby, or you're listening to Greg Osby, on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio. This is Leroy Downs on the Live with the Jazz Cat segment. Hey, so what source do you tap into when you conceptualize music? I mean, it's so free and expansive, and especially when you got this trio, that seems that it would free it up a little more. Are there any obstacles or parameters that set
There's
limits
a cliche,
on it?
You know, life imitates art.
Right.
And I think art should imitate life as well. And as a world traveler, a global traveler, a globetrotter, really.
Right.
You know, all of those experiences, they should go into the music. It should be reflective of, you know, the great people that I meet and the wonderful books, you know, people turn me on to, and intellectuals, sages, soothsayers, you know, authorities on things, professors, even just common folks, you know, in some
right.
of the smaller villages all throughout Europe and Asia and the Far East and Australia or whatever. So all of this, you know, is synthesized and condensed and compressed, and, you know, I put this into the music. And even as a composer, I try to start, you know, from a different place. You know, I
right.
try not to just sit at the piano and write or play write for my saxophone. You know, sometimes things are purely conceptual. Sometimes they're based upon logic or different philosophies that may have little to do with music in the beginning. So I'm just trying to associate, you know, all of these experiences and just the, you know, the life experiences into the art.
Well, it's interesting that you mention the common folks, because you, of course, being attuned to this creative process that we go through with the music, you get it, you suck it up, and you absorb it. What do you think will take for the general public, not just to listen, but to hear, visualize, internalize, and even conceptualize the message that you and other cats are trying to put out there?
Well, I think at the hub of this issue is the musicians themselves. Kind of made the music so exclusive, and you know, that it's alienated a lot of potential patrons, potential new listeners and new fans of this music. Also, the way the music is represented in the media, in our daily lives, is used as background, you know, for commercials and things that have nothing to do with, you know, with the nobility of this art form.
Right.
Also, and you know, for a long time, I mean, since the very beginning, you know, jazz and, you know, a lot of other types of folk music and high art, they're kind of a boys' club. So they've alienated women. And I really strongly feel that if women found particulars in the music that were appealing to them, and, you know, then they would come out. But, you know, it's so, sometimes things are so aggressive, they don't address, you know, a man's softer side or his tender side or just his more artful side. Everything's all about, you know, going for it and, you know, and testosterone. So women stay away from the clubs. Now, you know, you can be assured that if women come to the clubs,
absolutely,
usually if they come in twos or threes and you know, and sit at the table, when, you know, the cats are going to be sniffing up behind them.
Right.
So we have to figure out a way to get the women into the clubs and to make it appealing to young people. Young people like things that have what I call oral handles. These are things that they hear that they can hold on to.
Yeah.
So they have to be reflective of, you know, of their age groups. And so we have to kind of, you know, just through Q&A, through association with younger people, finding out what they like.
Yeah.
Other than hip hop,
right,
which
right.
is obvious, and employ some of those values in the music, and then, you know, then they may respond to it favorably.
Well, you know, the you're right about the women. That's a key factor, and I think George Clinton said it best. You know, why must I be like that? Why must I chase the cat? Because if the women are there, you better be sure that the guys will be there, and then there's another scene created around this music, and that will start adding some of the fuel to those embers that we're talking about.
Absolutely, that's a given.
Yeah. Hey, I find, as you probably do, that many of the jazz venues, you know, they're not really doing as well as we like to. I mean, they love the music in most cases, but are booking in the venues less than creative talents, and those are the ones that seem to, you know, make all of the money, the ones that are putting the music out, not in a way that is going to cognitively challenge you, but basically just give it to you, so simply. I mean, what do we do about that?
Well, promoters and proprietors of jazz venues and these types of establishments, they don't really have the ear to the scene. They don't really know who's making noise. As far as, you know, the cats go, they don't know who are the real cats. They just look at Billboard charts and, you know, CMJ and those kind of things, or you know, they go by word of mouth, or, you know, who's the hot young guy that somebody's embracing. They're embracing people because they look nice, or because they look nice in a suit, or they talk the talk, or whatever. Not because they're productive, or they're saying something that all, you know, the people are responding to, or that is that new or fresh or innovative.
Right.
So it's kind of like a Flavor of the Month club. You know, while the baddest cats are, you know, sitting at home watching Jerry Springer. You know, that's unfortunate. You know, they're unemployed. They're driving a taxi all day. And, you know, some of the cats that really aren't, you know, coming, you know, aren't really bringing it. You know, they're working, you know, all the time, you know, and they're, you know, making the rounds. So I just think things need to be a lot more balanced, and it would help if people who book these venues were a bit better versed in, you know, what it takes, you know, to make a really profound statement in this music, and you know, who the cats are, who are, if they would make it known to themselves, you know, who the cats are, who are making the best statements, and you know, who are doing things that are memorable, and you know, just hopefully, you know, scene change.
Well, you know what, I agree with you. In that sense, that the jazz club owners, you know, they need to know what's going on. But I also blame the public a lot for not, you know, for not opening up their ears to hear that new sound that the cats are putting out. So it's got to be some lessons given to them as well.
Well, people have been deprogrammed to a large degree. I mean, ever since, you know, like the late 70s or early 80s when MTV came. They said, you know, video killed the radio star.
Yeah, right.
That's very true, because yeah. now people are influenced by what they see.
Right.
And, you know, a show has to be a show. It has to be, you know, rife with visuals. It has to have, like, 12 girls with knee pads, you know, dancing in sync, you know, doing basically aerobics.
Those
has to have, you know, some fireworks going on.
Right.
Has to have some people on the pole or on pedestals and, you know, things that detract from the fact that, you know, what you're really listening to isn't that happening.
Sure, sure.
Jazz is, you know, is an oral medium. You know, it's a transformation medium. It takes people on a trip, on a journey. A lot of people don't, I mean, they're just too lazy, you know, to sit still long enough, because people have been conditioned to, you know, to get it now, you know, the immediate gratification stuff, all these rapid fire images of video and stuff. They don't have, you know, the patience to sit down and really listen to these people who've, you know, sacrificed and worked on, you know, something that hopefully is memorable.
Yeah.
It's we kind of have to reel the people back in. It's kind of a Pied Piper's thing. You kind of have to reel them in and say, look, man, you know, balance your life out. I mean, you can't, you can't eat, you know, fattening foods and things that have no protein and things that have no nutritional value and expect to be healthy.
Absolutely.
And the same thing, you can't feed your brain that as well.
That's beautiful, man. Nutrients.
Absolutely.
Some greens. Dark greens, man. This is Leroy Downs on Live with the Jazz Cat. My guest, Mr. Greg Osby. We're listening to it on KRML, Jazz and Blues Radio.
Oh, thank you very much, Leroy. What an interesting individual. Greg, if we can get you back on again soon with the Jazz Cat, that would be great. You have so much to say.
I would love to.
And you say it so well, too, by the way.
Thank you so much.
I wish I could say it more as well as you can. Listen, we're going to come right back with Leroy the Jazz Cat Downs. We're going to have a conversation with him personally to find a little bit more about this gentleman that so many of you have asked about. You're listening to For Locals Only on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio, and let's listen to a little bit of Greg Osby's CD here.
Greg Osby's 2004 Blue Note release is titled Public, and this one titled Sha Enough. Greg Osby out front on alto saxophone with trumpeter Nicholas Payton. Megumi Yonezawa, the pianist. Robert Leslie Hertz, a third place bass. Rodney Green drums with alto saxophonist Greg Osby. The program is For Locals Only with Gary Hamada.
I'm going to take advantage of having the Jazz Cat himself in studio here at KRML. And one of the things that many of you have asked is, how do I get to hear some of these interviews? Well, very simple. You go to his website. It's www. Here it is. You want to jot it down. You know the www stuff. Okay. Here's what you need to really put down in your notepad. thejazzcat.net. And remember, it's thejazzcat.net. Net. That's the key word. And you go to that site, and you will find a lot of information, very attractive site, as well as all the interviews that he's had on KRML, including Dee Dee Bridgewater, Carmen Lundy, Thelonious Monk Jr., Kenny Werner, just to name a few. I think we had Russell Malone. We've had Diane Reeves. He is the man on the scene, and that's why they call him the Jazz Cat, because he will give you and he will break it down for you on the air. So go to that site, thejazzcat.net, and we are blessed today to have him in the studio. And I'm going to tap him on the shoulder and see if I can interview him in a moment here, so all of you can get a little idea of who this particular individual is that is so well-respected among all the artists and among his peers. I got Leroy Downs here in studio right now. Hey, Leroy.
Hey, Gary. What's up, man?
Okay, now I'm going to turn the tables, and I get to interview you a little bit. You know, you have such a comfortable manner with these artists, and it seems like you go back a long ways with them. Maybe these are personal friends. A lot of them have a lot of respect for you. What is it that makes it the key that you're able to converse with them so easily?
Well, you know, a lot of these musicians are, you know, over the years, I've really taken all of these relationships and really built upon that and made it my mission, really, to go out and see these performers when they get to town and tell them, hey, man, I appreciate you. You know, when I used to work for Kayla Wynn in Los Angeles, I say, hey, man, I appreciate you. I play your music on the station. You know, I'm all about the music. So, and if there's a way that I can support these beautiful artists, then that's my gift. I always have to give something for jazz. I mean, when I go to a performance and I'm taking all of that in, I don't feel right unless I give something back. So it's just my way to do that.
One of the things I've noticed in conversing with your artists is that we've had you on many times in the past year now. One of the things I enjoy is we never know where you're going to have these artists, right? For example, we talked to Dee Dee Bridgewater. She was standing in line for the Grammy Awards, was it?
Yeah, she was getting her tickets.
And you're interviewing her while she was standing in line because they told her, move along, please.
Yeah, well, that's the beauty, man. It's really, you know, jazz is such a lovely art form, and these artists are really people. And I like to express the human side of the artist and the music as well, showing you that, hey, they're people, and they live and do their thing and go down to a corner and get a burger just like you do. And, you know, they have talents to give us as well.
One of the things I've noticed is that it seems as though just talking to people like Greg Osby, you know, Prince Lachey, every one of these individuals, I say it's very, what I call it, deep, but these are very intelligent individuals, very
Absolutely.
Intelligent.
Jazz is an intelligent music, and a lot of the times I speak to all of these guys and we talk about the business, the music, how do we get the audience to understand? That seems to be one of the questions I like to ask everybody is how do we get the audience to open up their ears a little more and hear the music. And I'm not asking everybody just because it's a constant question. I'm really searching for the answer. You know, I want somebody to really say, you know, to come across it like, hey, and maybe we can all start that spark going, you know.
Give us your first newborn. We'll start there. That's what happened to me, man. I was abducted by gypsies and raised by, you know, by the Spanish, and you're going to listen to this and eat this.
It doesn't get much better than this, folks. There's three guys here enjoying the KRML radio, enjoying our company. We enjoy each other's company. We're talking about jazz. And one of the things I remember most is another conversation that you had in the living room of Diane Reeves in Colorado with Russell Malone.
That was great. That was, you know, one of my best experiences. I don't know if many of you know, but I am producing a jazz television show. It's, you know, it's very, you know, low-key so far. I'm kind of doing it and supporting it and funding it all on my own. But once I have all of these, and I've got a number of lovely pieces of film, but once I get them all edited, you know, that's when I'll start approaching the big boys about, you know, giving us some money to really do this right. And for those people like ourselves here in the studio and those of you listening that love the jazz, you get it. So that's easy. But for those who don't get it, they need not just the audio, the audible media, they need some visual media to go along with that. And then with that, maybe they'll start to get to understand and start to buy some more, you know, Greg Osby records, Diane Reeves records. Well, Diane's the top of the food chain.
She just won the Grammy. Yeah,
She's the girl. Hey, Diane. But, you know, there's so many other artists that are below that that no one know about. And they're so talented. And it's my... You know, I was put here on this earth to try to put it out there. So,
well, for us that love the music, love jazz specifically, when you go to these artists and you have them on the show, your show, you're actually giving us an insight into what they're thinking, how they're living, and this is what people want to know. You know, for some reason or another, people think that, you know, maybe these artists are a little bit remote or a little bit, you know, more distant, but they're not.
Well, no, they're not, but, you know, they all have things to say, and I try to just have a conversation with them and to spark some ideas and let them express themselves as opposed to, and so what was it like, you know, you were born here and you're in and who did you play with and
how many years
did you play with these guys? I mean, I throw some stuff in there like that, too, but... Mm-hmm. I want to try to reach for the interesting question, something that makes them go, whoa, okay, huh, let me think about that for a minute.
Well, that means you have to have an understanding of the not only the individual, but also of the music.
Yeah.
Yeah.
and also letting the audience know that these people, you know, they grew up eating cornbread and beans like anybody else. And,
yeah.
And they, you know, they had to survive. And this is their lifestyle. This is... you know, what they do for a living, and they have to put their entire self into it to bring that kind of a quality to this music. Mm-hmm. They are totally dedicated to this.
You're right. And what that also gives us as a listening audience is hope for the things that we want to do in life. You see, these guys are normal people, and they've risen to the top, and they've dedicated themselves to their art. Well, every individual out there has some sort of art or something that they love, and if they just spend their time putting their energy toward that, they can be happy living and doing what they want to do as well. So it gives that sense of hope to, like, hey, man, this guy did this. I could do this too, you know.
How did you, about what age did you actually get started in listening to jazz? I mean, is that something that you just, you know, is that a silly question? Or no,
that's not a silly question at all. Most people, they have parents that are raised listening to jazz and all these jazz albums around, and I happen to be one of those people that didn't happen to. You know, I was listening to hip-hop and R&B and that sort of stuff, and I just, mentally, something came across me saying, I'm in a search for something else. And then I turned to what I thought was jazz at the moment, but that's okay. It got me out. It's a little on the smoother side. They didn't even call it smooth jazz back then. But I heard a different sound, and I gravitated toward that. And to be quite honest, what really pulled me in to the world of jazz, everybody listening, were the young players. It was Roy Hargrove and Terrence Blanchard, because they had such a respect for the tradition, and the music that they were playing was actually music that I didn't know about but had existed so many years before. And I got into them playing it, and then that door just opened up to, like, oh, well, now that you hear this, open up the door to the closet. There's a whole vault of music that it's time to go and spend some time learning about. And that's what I've been doing.
Real quick, while I got you here, Greg Osby mentioned a question that has been repeated over time with jazz, is that how do we get to have the masses listen to this great music, our own, you know, classical music, so to speak, in America?
Well, that's one reason why I'm doing this television show, because jazz, if you extend your arms that span about, you know, mine span about, I don't know, 6 feet or so, and you say that that's music, and then you go all the way down to, you know, your little pinky, and you say that's jazz. So out of all that music, jazz is like a little small hit on the spectrum. But I think that the people who get it, like you and I, it's no problem. But the people who aren't getting it, they need a visual to go along with the audio. They don't turn their dial all the way to the left to find that music. And even if they got there, would they know what they heard when they get there? So I think the mass public needs a little visual help. And hopefully
they always hear it behind a car commercial or whatever commercial. And, you know, they've tons of jazz on the air. They just don't know they're listening to it.
It's subliminal, so it's in there. You know, when I was a kid, I watched the cartoons. And when I became an adult, I hear classical music and say, well, how do I already know that? Because it got in there, you know. So I think jazz education in the schools when we're young, you know, yes, these commercials, they're commercializing, but at least it's getting in subliminally. So those are the ways that it can help.
Well, thank you very much, Leroy, for being here today. There's so many more things I'd like to ask you, but we'll spend another time on it. And particularly on today's show with Greg Osby, and I can see you certainly co-hosting or hosting your own show. If you want more information about Leroy Downs and his tremendous website, which features many, many interviews with these top artists, if you want to really understand what a jazz artist thinks, as you can tell, Leroy, the Jazz Cat Downs, can bring you that in his interviews. And just go to his website. It's really a very easy website to remember. Just remember thejazzcat.net. Remember, thejazzcat.net. Okay, and you go to that website and you get all that information. Very attractive, and we appreciate him being on KRML Jazz and Blues Radio every week for his Live with the Jazz Cat segment, and he'll bring us someone again next Tuesday about 5:15, 5:14 p.m. I don't know yet who it's going to be, but you go to his website and you'll find out.
Yeah, you'll find out. I think I have Gretchen Parlato scheduled for next week. But one thing I failed to mention is that Greg Osby is going to be at the Jazz Bakery next week on Tuesday the 25th through the 29th. So if you want to get a chance to go see some music and hear what some of that intelligence is all about, then go on down to the Jazz Bakery. Those of you here in Carmel, take a trip. Come on down to Los Angeles. Contact me, man. We'll hang out and have a good time.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. And I can someday I'll tell all of you some stories that I had sitting across the table from Miles Davis at the Both End Club in San Francisco, and what an intelligent and introspective individual he was to just enjoy his visions. By the way, we'll be right back. If you're listening to KRML Jazz and Blues Radio on the around the world, you're listening to it on KRMLradio.com. If you're listening to it locally, it's 1410 AM, and on cable, it is Comcast Cable 92.5 FM. We'll be right back to close out our Day After Tax show. Hooray, our celebration. It's Tuesday, April 18, 2006, from our studios at the Eastwood Building, KRML Jazz and Blues Radio in Carmel by the Sea, California.